How do you say the word M-E-A-S-U-R-E?
Measure? Well, what do you say? Measure?
So we Measure. Also have a different pronunciation for the word. I have to stop myself to say it correctly. Almond. Almond.
Almond?
Yeah, almond. We don't say that.
What do you say?
We grow them there, so we say Ammon.
Where are you from? Ammon? I've never heard anybody Ammon. Say Ammon.
Enough fooling around here. Let's do this thing. These people have actual serious work to do, to get back to, research to get done, deals to
do. There you go.
Come on. Coming up on The Week in Geek, Silicon Valley's Seattle startup secret. California firms are investing in Seattle area startups in record numbers, and we will survey the landscape for startup investing with experts from Silicon Valley Bank. You're listening to The Week in Geek on GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm podcast producer and health and life sciences reporter Claire McGrain.
And we're pleased to be joined here in the GeekWire studio by two representatives of Silicon Valley Bank. First, Stephen Pipp is research director at Silicon Valley Bank and co-author of the firm's new State of the Markets 2018 report. It's great to have you here, Stephen.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to have you here. And I'd also like to bring in Min Lee. He is the market manager for Silicon Valley Bank's Washington and Western Canada region, headquartered out of Seattle, a mainstay of the Seattle tech community. It's great to have you here, Min.
Thanks, Todd. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So we've got a lot to talk about today. We just published a story today by Taylor Soper that I think will really kick things off in terms of this conversation. There has been a real influx of firms, investment firms and venture capitalists from California, the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, starting to invest more and more in Seattle area startups. Min, I know this trend is bigger even than just Silicon Valley. So the data that we cited shows that Silicon Valley firms participated in 69 investments for Seattle area startups in 2017. That's more than double what we saw about a decade ago. So we've seen a big increase in these Silicon Valley firms investing in these Seattle area startups. And it's changed the dynamic of what a lot of startup founders are seeing. Min, how does this square with what you're seeing at Silicon Valley Bank?
We can, you know, I get a lot of phone calls from investors from, you know, both locally and outside of the area, just trying to get a sense of what's going on in the market. And I can certainly say that, you know, as a leading indicator of what we're seeing from investment activity in the local market, we're getting more phone calls from outside of the area. Venture capital firms really curious about what's going on in our local market. You know, if you think about the data that we have in the State of the Markets that looks at the trends of actual investments happening, it supports that. And Stephen, my colleague who authored the State of the Markets report, can probably share more about that.
Yeah. So, Stephen, one of the entrepreneurs that we spoke with, Manny Medina from Outreach, described the dynamic where they used to have to fly down to Sand Hill Road and Silicon Valley to get investments. And now it's to the point where there's enough demand that those investors are actually coming here to get pitched by Seattle startups on putting money into their companies. What are you seeing in the numbers? And do they bear out these trends that we're seeing anecdotally?
Yeah, absolutely. We really start with the insights that we're getting on the ground in markets from folks like Min, and then go find the data to support it. In this case, especially in the later stages, Series B and beyond, we're seeing almost equal participation from investors in California versus those based here locally.
That's interesting. So when you talk about Series B, the first thing that a company would raise is they call it a seed round. And obviously that's angel funding, they often call that. But then they go Series A, which is their first substantial round of venture capital. And so you're saying when they get to that third stage, like Series B, then you're seeing actual equal participation in Seattle area companies.
Exactly. So there's an incredible network of angel investors and a talented group of founders here building companies. And as they reach a scale where they're really trying to build out their business, reaching into larger pools of capital coming out of the Bay Area to grow their sales team, to expand the firm as a whole, that's when they're looking outside of the Seattle area and being able to tapping an abundance of capital from the Bay Area, looking for opportunities. VCs are always on the hunt for what's next. And the talent pool in Seattle here is building great companies that are attracting that investment, and they're coming here to find it.
Anecdotally, are you seeing particular kinds of companies come out of Seattle that folk in Silicon Valley are more kind of drawn to, perhaps something that you don't have as much of in that area?
Actually, it's a lot of similar companies to the Bay Area that investors, venture capitalists are comfortable with and seeing great companies being built here. I think of software as a service as a large overlapping market between the two regions. There are other areas like space technologies that while we have a number of companies down in the Bay Area, there's kind of a surprising abundance of companies here in Seattle that are attracting capital as well, especially at the large end of the spectrum of capital raising.
Let's talk about a few examples, because I know there are some companies that represent these trends, and we can look at the overall data through the lens of what they've done. One is a company called Cumulo, which may not be a household name even to people in the Seattle region, but it raised a lot of money this year, $93 million. It's run by Bill Richter, who is formerly of Madrona Venture Group and has a long history here in the Seattle region. Cumulo is a cloud data storage company based in downtown Seattle, has about 180 people. How do they reflect the trends that you're seeing in terms of the investment that they're getting?
Absolutely. Really follows the trends of founded here in Seattle, just about 6 years old, and had support early on from local investors. By 2015, they were attracting investment from the Bay Area. And now in 2018, following a couple of nationwide trends that we're seeing across the country, one raising from international investors, actually attracting investment from Northern Light in China, and also from crossover investors. So these are investors who would typically be investing in the public markets, but are seeing the opportunity in the private markets to capture some growth, tap into the innovation happening here in Seattle. So BlackRock actually led their most recent round.
So Min, you've followed and been part of the Seattle tech community for a while. How would you describe this evolution and what do you think of it? Because I think a lot of times people think of Seattle as kind of a secondary market to Silicon Valley, but clearly the investors there are interested to some extent in the companies here.
Yeah, and I think Cumulo may be a one-off, but you know, when we go through the data and you know, if you think about the trend that we're seeing in terms of you know companies being able to raise more private capital, larger dollar sizes, and be able to you know go longer, you know, we're certainly seeing that trend here. If you think about you know the dollar sizes that have been raised here just in this year, I believe it's there were 10 north of $50 million equity rounds that were raised this year, which is as much or more than what was raised that were in that size over the last 3 years.
Okay, so in other words, there are big deals happening in the span of 1 year that would have happened in multiple years in the past.
Yeah, and I think it's a trend. You're seeing a later stage, larger rounds happening. If you look at like you know venture capital fundraise as an example. You know, I think it was last quarter you saw more venture capital fundraising than you'd ever seen, but the number of funds that are raising it are you know it's not a high volume. It's these mega funds raising large amounts of capital to be able to deploy in later stage companies and put more money in. And so you're seeing this trend of larger rounds as a result of that.
It's interesting. And that does bear out in the national data that you've been reporting, Stephen, where you have lots of, they call them unicorns, the companies valued at more than $1 billion that are attracting a lot of the money and smaller startups aren't getting as much. So you're seeing fewer deals with bigger deal sizes. Overall, the amount of money is similar, but it's going to companies in different ways.
Right. It's getting concentrated at the top. And when I look at the Seattle data, this isn't happening overnight. It's really an ecosystem that's been building over time, supported by local investors, supported by the incubators, all of the partners across the board. The other thing in this era of abundant capital, what's scarce is talent. And that's something that Seattle can really outpace a lot of the other markets across the country. You look at some of the tech giants here, Microsoft, Amazon, bringing in talent from across the country. Looking at the founder profiles of Seattle startups, you've got people from the universities you expect to see, the Stanfords, the Cals, but also strong concentration from the University of Washington. But also the talent that these tech giants are pulling in from across the country. Look to the Midwest, people from the University of Minnesota, from Colorado, people from really all over the country coming to Seattle, building a life at these tech companies and starting new tech companies here.
This is fascinating. We're talking about really the fuel that powers the technology startup community here in Seattle and around the country and ultimately around the world. We're speaking this week with two representatives of Silicon Valley Bank, Min Lee and Stephen Pipp, and we will be right back on The Week in Geek. Welcome back to The Week in Geek. It's Todd Bishop here with Claire McGrain from GeekWire, and we're joined by Stephen Pipp and Min Lee from Silicon Valley Bank. So we've been talking about a story that we published on GeekWire about this influx of Silicon Valley venture capital firms and the increase in those firms investing in Seattle area startups. Min, one of the stats that we cited was the fact that Seattle valuations overall, in other words, the value of the companies that are getting money from these investors, according to the stats we cited, is actually quite a bit less, about $15 million in terms of the median valuation in Seattle compared to Bay Area startups on the whole. But you were explaining that's only part of the picture.
Yeah, I think when you look at the early stage data that we have on kind of Series A valuations, actually it's pretty similar between the Bay Area and the Northwest. So if you think about a pre-money valuation standpoint, at least this year, both the Bay Area and Seattle, you'll see pre-money valuations at the median level at $25 million. And then when you think about dollar sizes they're raising, they're actually closed the gap there too. So historically, you'd see larger Bay Area rounds at the earlier stage. And this year, you know, it's a small data set, but this year in the Series A, you're seeing a very similar median raise dollar sizes at $10 million. Both in the Bay Area and Seattle. So it's pretty interesting.
Okay. So I feel like I need to translate some of this for folks out there. So the basic value that investors are placing on these startups before they put the money in, the pre-money valuation,
yeah,
for those of us out there who don't watch every episode of Shark Tank, that is essentially becoming very close between the two markets. What does that tell you? Because, again, traditionally, Seattle is seen as a second tier to Silicon Valley, even though we do have this enterprise technology strength where, you know, we're making great technology for businesses to use, whereas Silicon Valley has the consumer technology strength. What does this say that these valuations are getting close to one another?
Yeah, I think that perception comes from the stages at where investment's taking place. Both markets have a very healthy early stage, but we've seen now Seattle companies, again, to that point of raising these mega rounds in 2018, starting to catch up in the later stages as well. And those larger valuations at that late stage are going to start showing up in the aggregate data and showing that Seattle and Bay Area companies are pretty comparable.
Interesting. But for now, at least in the numbers that we're seeing, if you look at the overall valuations, all of the stages of investing, the Bay Area still has a higher median valuation.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I think, you know, I mentioned this earlier, but we're getting more and more outside of the area investors calling, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on in the early stages from an entrepreneurial standpoint so they can invest. And I think, you know, when you think about, one, the concentration of talent that we have here that is developing these companies, and then two, the recent exit activity that is really what drives the returns for venture capital investors, you know, with companies like Smartsheet, and, you know, even though DocuSign is a, you know, proclaimed headquarters in the Bay Area, that DocuSign was here in Avalara, and so it's certainly been prolific here in terms of the exits, and I think that also attracts investors from outside. And when you have critical mass of folks from outside coming in valuing companies, you know, the average median value just goes up.
Smartsheet, DocuSign, Avalara, they're all companies that filed for their initial public offerings, went public, had successful IPOs, and there had been a real drought in terms of those initial public offerings over the past few years. And that's been a trend that we've seen change. So how does that then play out into the overall investing picture, Stephen?
Yeah, Todd, great point. And if you think about Smartsheet, Avalara, those are decades old companies. Compare that to Amazon that went public at just 3 years old. The market has really changed where a lot of the value creation is taking place in the private markets before these companies are going public. That abundance of private capital is allowing these companies to scale. They're very different companies when they're going public compared to, say, the dot-com era.
It's interesting, though, because in some cases, they're not yet profitable still, even though they've been around for quite a while. Does that change the picture at all if these companies are going public with their actual numbers and the investors can see that they're not yet making money? They're still sort of in growth mode.
Investors are hungry for growth right now. If you look at some of the investors who are leading these private rounds, they used to be investing in public markets that aren't seeing quite the growth of a Smartsheet or a DocuSign. T. Rowe Price leading a couple of rounds, BlackRock, some of these big names are tapping into the innovation happening in Seattle, in the Bay Area, across the globe, and seeing returns there.
Okay. What does this mean for the average person out there thinking about a job in the tech industry? Does this mean that they're more likely to find a job at a startup in Seattle or a middle stage company or a public company or Microsoft or an Amazon? How has this whole investment picture and where the money's flowing changed where people end up working?
It's a good question. I think, I think the short answer is there's going to be a lot of options. And, you guys do, as good a job as anybody in terms of tracking all of the large companies that have opened development shops here and created more opportunities for jobs for folks in the tech industry. And so, you can join an early stage company and make a bet. And if that doesn't work out, you have 200 other companies that you could go to. So I just think that there's a lot of opportunities for folks that are skilled in the tech area.
One thing we talked about on last week's show was just what seems to be a little bit of a cooling off in the real estate market here locally, which is sort of a secondary effect from tech investing. But it seems like Amazon's slowdown in terms of its hiring here in Seattle is maybe having an impact on some of the communities and housing prices around town. Are you seeing any impact or any slowdown at all in the economy, big picture, in your research at Silicon Valley Bank?
Looking at the economy as a whole, we're really excited about where the U.S. is headed and see a lot of growth still to come. And that really benefits tech as long as consumers are buying, companies are spending. That benefits tech in a number of ways. Technology tends to outswing the market overall. Having an economy that's so based on technology leaves you exposed to that. But we also think this represents a real shift towards the digital age. Cities like those in the Bay Area and like Seattle represent the new economy. That's why people are moving here and where the jobs are being created.
So, Stephen, your report is really a global report. It's the State of the Markets 2018 report from Silicon Valley Bank. What are the big picture takeaways? Obviously, we've been going really granular here with Seattle, and we reflect some of the big trends. But when you look at investing around the world, what are the key things you would want people to know from your report?
I think this quarter's report really dives into the fact that technology on this incredible bull run, the economy growing, is spreading into areas not yet seen. So new industries starting to adapt technologies, new geographies coming into the digital age. That's what we look at, some emerging sectors, some emerging geographies, and actually visited China to do research on the ground with our teams at the joint venture bank that we have in China to get their global perspective as well to see where the innovation economy is headed.
And what did you learn in China?
I think what stands out from our time in China is how many parallels there are between the two markets. While there's less overlap than there was, say, 3 to 5 years ago in investor base, the companies being built are tackling a lot of the same problems, but in unique ways to the markets.
That's surprising to me because I associate China with hardware and electronics, and I think of software and enterprise technology in the West Coast of the United States. What kinds of similarities did you see?
We're seeing an evolution from that. So we're actually opening a new office, a new branch in Shenzhen, China, which is really the epicenter for all of that hardware manufacturing. DJI, a consumer drone company that's made it here to the U.S., is headquartered there. But also headquartered there is a company like Tencent, a mobile social gaming company that's spreading from its roots in that consumer side into healthcare, into e-commerce, into logistics that we're seeing as an increasingly important way of getting goods from point A to point B. And even the tech giants here in the U.S., like Amazon, is making significant investments in that area. So those are the parallels where, as they continue to branch out, they're starting to overlap and see similar opportunities.
Very cool. Min, you've been operating in the Seattle tech ecosystem for a while. As you talk to your colleagues in other Silicon Valley Bank markets around the country and the world, when you talk with people who aren't immersed in that world, what surprises them when you talk about Seattle tech startups?
Yeah, I do think that people are still shocked at how many big companies have offices here. And if you think about it, even Apple has their AI center, having bought Turi. So it surprises folks that there are so many strong development centers and even some of the bigger companies having their central technology centers here. is pretty unique and different.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, that acquisition a couple of years ago, that was a $200 million acquisition that Apple made of a company that essentially was founded by an artificial intelligence and machine learning expert, Carlos Gestrin, and he's now with Apple working on machine learning out of that headquarters at 2 Union Square, right?
That's right.
Right in
yeah.
downtown Seattle. I mean, so a lot of that is happening right here. And frankly, the biggest surprise to me is you've got that happening with more than 100 engineering centers from these out-of-town tech companies, and you've got the startup stuff going on, and you've got Microsoft and Amazon. It feels like there's just tons of talent, but I'm always surprised when things are going as well across those three areas as they are.
Yeah. When we talk about like sharing this information and folks still being surprised at what's going on is one of the things that I think, you know, our region can do a better job of is just being able to tell the story. And, you know, you guys are certainly one of the key megaphones for being able to tell the story and what's going on in tech. But I don't know if there's a real, you know, good central point that really tells the story of what's going on in Seattle.
Well, Min Lee, thank you very much for being here. And Stephen Pipp, it's great to have you here from the Bay Area. Stephen, where can people find out more about your research at Silicon Valley Bank?
The State of the Markets report comes out on a quarterly basis, always looking at new trends and what's hot in venture. It can be found on the front page of SVB.com.
Great. Min, where can people follow you?
Well, you can find me on SVB.com, too. You can look up my name, Min, M-I-N-H, last name Lee, L-E. You can email me at M-Q-L-E at SVB.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at M-Q-L-E.
All right. And actually, hey, let's have you both stick around for the Random Channel. We'll do that coming up next on The Week in Geek on GeekWire. Welcome back. You're listening to The Week in Geek, and it is time for the Random Channel. It's Todd Bishop.
And Claire McGrain.
All right, Claire, this is one of our favorite segments, and we've asked Stephen Pipp and Min Lee from Silicon Valley Bank to stick around for this one. I hope you're both ready. You got your random items ready?
We're excited.
Okay.
As good as it'll get.
All right. All right. So, Claire, my item is American Ninja Warrior. Did you expect that?
No. Where have you been for the last, like, 10 years?
No, I know. So, my daughter is really into American Ninja Warrior, and she is pressuring me to, in our backyard, create a course for her to do this stuff. And I was like, oh, are you kidding me? Who would possibly do that? Oh my gosh. On YouTube, there is a dad who puts all other dads to shame. And he basically created this giant, you have to see the thing. We'll have to link to it from the show notes. But he created this giant backyard America Ninja Warrior course for his daughter. And it is just off the chart. It's like he's like got her stuffed animals sitting there cheering for her. It's over the top.
He's not doing you any favors.
He's not. No, I feel like you watch that and you just feel completely inadequate as a parent. So.
Here's a question for you. Do you think you could do the course? Like, is it hard?
I probably not. I could probably not do the course.
Okay.
It's pretty difficult. Yeah. So anyway, that is my random channel item. It's been on my mind. I've been looking at the backyard going, how am I going to do this in a way that's manageable yet challenging? It's going to be difficult.
I look forward to an update.
Yes, exactly. All right. So Min, do you want to jump in with yours?
Sure. I watch mixed martial arts, UFC, and I'm super excited about Conor McGregor, the Notorious, if you know who that is.
Yes.
Coming back in after 2 years layoff to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. I think I said his name right.
That's a tough one.
I can't believe that you took that on as your random channel item, that with that last name. So, yeah, obviously Conor McGregor had that. Didn't he fight Floyd Mayweather in boxing?
Floyd Mayweather, made a bunch of money, had a child, and then had a conflict with this Russian fighter from Kazakhstan who confronted one of his teammates. And so what ended up happening was he brought something like 20 friends from Ireland, flew over in a private jet, confronted them Whoa. As they were leaving a press conference, and attacked a bus and threw a dolly at the bus, windows, like went super nuts to try to start a big brawl.
I didn't follow this.
No. Was this recent or was this?
This was the last several months.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so he's gone to court for it and is doing, you know, he got slapped on the wrist for it, but now he's back and they're getting ready to fight.
And you're excited about it.
It's going to be a big, Khabib is undefeated. He is, you know, literally you can look up him as a kid wrestling bears.
So are there any lessons that you take from the world of mixed martial arts and apply to startups and Silicon Valley Bank? Anything that you, no chair throwing at buses, right?
No. But if you talk about fighting for your life every day, these guys are super prepared, for the individual they're going to fight. It's usually a 2-3 month camp they go through, and then they are tailored to fight this one person, and they get in a cage, and it's just them hand to hand, fighting for their life effectively.
So I did not expect the Random Channel to take such a violent turn this week, but hey, that's why you bring in guests, and I'm the one who brought up American Ninja Warrior. Go ahead, Claire.
Mine is also kind of violent, actually. So I started listening to this podcast from Long Reads and Oregon Public Radio called Bundyville. Do you guys know who the Bundys are?
No, not Ted Bundy.
Not Ted Bundy.
Not Al Bundy?
Not Al Bundy.
Okay. So then no.
Cliven Bundy and his sons. You might remember them for taking over a national building that was in, I think, a national forest or a wildlife refuge in Oregon. So it's this group. And they've had a long history of clashing with the federal government over land rights. So this reporter who had been reporting on that incident really digs deep, like generations and generations back in their history, and learns about the history of this family clashing with the government partially over their Mormon faith, and gets into why one of the brothers is now running for government, and goes meets them on their ranch. And it is a fascinating look at kind of extremism in the West today.
So that's like a 7-episode podcast series.
It's exactly 7. Good job.
Yeah, I know. We talked about this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that sounds really good. So what's it called again?
Bundyville.
Bundyville.
Yeah.
Okay, new podcast.
Yeah. If you're looking for a new podcast to binge, go check it out.
Yeah, remember that whole story unfolding and the whole standoff and everything? So
that was the second standoff as well. They initiated one 2 years earlier when the Bureau of Land Management tried to take some of their cattle in payment for fees they hadn't been paying for years and years. And they went with rifles, pointed their rifles at the federal agents, and then took all the cattle back.
Wow.
So there's an interesting history here.
Yeah. All right, Stephen Pipp, the bar is high for the Random Channel this week. Lots of violence.
Well, I'll take it back local. I'm excited for the return of football. We've got great college football this weekend, the return of Michigan-Notre Dame, and it's great to be in Seattle this weekend for the big game for UW against Auburn, probably the game of the week. And I'll be cheering for the Purple. Being from Minnesota, I'm used to rooting for the Vikings. So how about another team of Purple People Eaters?
There you go. Nice. Okay. Hey, that's great. Well,
it's
a
still
little
kind
more
of violent.
It is very violent. It's good. No, that's right. I mean, it's amazing to think it's almost fall. It's almost football. And by the way, when you said football, I immediately thought you were going to talk about soccer. So,
well, I can't tell if the seasons are changing down in the Bay Area. So the only way I can keep track of time is with football.
Nice. All right. Well, Min and Stephen, thank you very much, both of you, for sticking around for that Random Channel tradition. Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast. If you are not already, you should subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. Just search GeekWire, all one word, in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you like what we do, consider leaving us a rating and a review. It really helps other people find the show. You can see more of our coverage at geekwire.com. The GeekWire podcast is produced by Claire McGrain. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm Claire McGrain.
We'll talk to you next time on The Week in Geek.